broadcasting from the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It's time for Kick Set with USA Swimming, bringing you interviews with athletes, coaches, and experts from age group swimming to the national and Olympic teams.
Hello, and welcome to Kick Set. I am your host, Dan McCarthy. Thanks for coming back. I'm super happy so many of you took time to listen to last month's podcast with Keenan Robinson. It seemed to be super popular, and some really important topics were covered. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, visit any SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and download and listen to it. And while you're there, look through some of the podcasts we've done in the past. I think we have almost 30 podcasts up now, and I'm sure there's someone that you would be interested in listening to. Well, here we are at the end of February, which is one of the most exciting times of the year across all the levels of our sport. Age group championships are coming soon, if within the next month. Sectionals, high school championships, local and state championships are going to be starting, I think, this weekend. I know we've had some already in some states in the Midwest, and college conference championships began last week. And next week we're going to kick off March with the Tier Pro Swim Series in Des Moines, Iowa, and that'll be March 4th through 8th. As always, when you're looking for information regarding the Tier Pro Swim Series, the usaswimming.org website is your source for race videos, start times, ticket information. Anything you need to know about the Pro Swim Series can be found at our website. Today's guest is Cynthia Eubanks. Cynthia is the executive director of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, and she's a member of the USA Swimming Foundation Board of Directors. Cynthia has been in higher education for most of the last 26 years, if not all of it. And she's been on both sides of it. She's been in the curriculum education side and also in the student life and student affairs space. The Sigma Gamma Rho organization is huge. They have 90,000 members. And in addition to Learn to Swim, they also provide community service in education, healthcare, political action, and leadership development. So it's a important partnership that USA Swimming has with Sigma Gamma Rho because of our interest in swimming, obviously, swim lessons, learn to swim, especially in communities with challenges of getting those programs started. Cynthia's been very active in her sorority, and now she's right at the top of the leadership of it. She's going to share some of her personal stories about swimming and why she's so drawn to it. And we got a chance to talk about mental health, and also found to discover that we share we have a favorite TV show in common, The Wire. So we'll take a little bit of time and chat about that as well. All right, take a listen. Good morning, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I couldn't be better. I wish it was a little bit warmer outside, but other than that, I'm not complaining.
Okay. Well, don't send the cold weather this way.
All right. And where are you today? Where am I talking to you?
I am in Cary, North Carolina.
Oh, wonderful. Now, you grew up in New Jersey, though, correct?
I did. I was born and raised in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
And you had I guess I'm going to call it life-changing, because it's kind of defined you even up to this point in your life. You had the opportunity to have swim lessons when you were a little girl.
I did. I learned how to swim along with my siblings as a child at our local YWCA.
And a lot of times when people have swim lessons, today you just... you sign up at the local pool, but that may have not been the easiest thing to do 20, 30, 40 years ago. How did your mom even find swim lessons?
Well, actually, it was a unique situation. I was fortunate enough in New Brunswick to have not only a YWCA, but also a YMCA. So I might be showing my age a little bit. We were fortunate to have those resources in our community. And how we actually engaged in swim lessons, how my mother ended up registering us, was after actually a tragedy. There was a drowning from a child. I don't remember the specifics, but I do remember my mother and her girlfriend after Mass on Sunday coming back to the house and having coffee and them talking about it and just being really, really sad. So before I knew it, you know, Patricia, Joe, Chris and I were all in swim lessons.
And unfortunately, that story still happens all too often. And that's kind of why you're involved the way you are right now.
Yes, it is unfortunate that often it takes a tragedy for us to kind of see the value in different aspects of things that we should be involved in. And for this case, it was swimming. But I am very grateful that my parents had enough initiative to make sure that that was an opportunity that was provided to my siblings and I.
Okay. So now you are the executive director of Sigma Gamma Rho. Do I have the title correct?
Yes, you do.
And you're involved with Swim 1922. For the uninitiated, for people that maybe are new to swimming, can you kind of explain what these organizations are?
Sure. Well, Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority is an amazing organization. We were founded back in 1922 on the premise of sisterhood scholarship and service on the campus of Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana. Our seven educators who started the organization felt a need to make sure that we provided resources to our community by enhancing the lives of women and children, not just stateside, but here 98 years later, globally. So our swim initiative, Swim 1922,
okay,
is a partnership that birthed between us and USA Swimming. It started about 7 or 8 years ago with the premise of increasing the educational opportunities in swimming within the Black community, introducing it through swim clinics locally as well as nationally, and foster a culture of inclusion within the sport. So that's our initiative. We are here 8 years later, and we've had swim clinics all over the country, in small towns, in large cities, promoting the importance of water safety.
So I'm going to say we, because I work for USA Swimming, and I feel proud of everything that's been done through the organization and through the foundation. But we've had success penetrating some of these more vulnerable communities, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. And when you think about the importance of swimming and you think about, for example, within the African-American community, between 65 and 70% of children do not know how to swim or haven't had the opportunity, with similar statistics, just a little lower for the Latino community, you understand why this initiative is so important to the fundamental mission of our organization.
And there's still a lot to do, because there's still, you know, you and I have spoken about this before, but there's still facilities available that maybe, you know, haven't, they don't have the right people in place to make a connect with our programs or other programs. And, you know, this is purely anecdotal, but any guesses by you on the disconnect?
Wow, there's so many factors that we could say that affect why we have pools that are unused. And then in some communities, we have young people who would be so interested in learning how to swim if they had an opportunity. A lot of it is lack of communication, lack of engagement within communities, and really connecting all of the resources that are available and that are out there.
If by chance this podcast, I usually do this at the end, but I'll do it now. If by chance this podcast reaches somebody or someone that knows someone and they want to reach out because they have a connection to one of these communities, what should they do? Where should they go?
they could reach out to any of our local chapters. All of our chapters have information in regards to our Swim 1922 initiative. They can also visit our website, www.sgrow1922.org, or they can give us a call at headquarters, and we would love to be able to provide resources to them as well as connect them with the larger swim community that, of course, has, you know, far more resources than what we could provide through our initiative.
Yes. Okay. We'll double back on that at the end of the podcast too, just to make sure we get it in there twice.
Okay.
So you have a very stable and successful foothold, your organization right now. Any future initiatives? What do the next 10 years look like for Sigma Gamma Rho?
Wow. Well, when you think about our Swim 1922 initiatives, I can't help but think of the next level that we've already begun to take it on. We recently have a partnership with the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, where we provided a donation to help get their pool back up and running. And we now have created our Swim 1922 Fellowship, where we have two students who will be working on the campus, not only to be instrumental in providing swim lessons and swim instructions to students at John Jay, but also to the surrounding community there in New York. So as we begin to venture out, we have a very good foothold when it comes down to providing swim clinics. But now it's time for the organization to really talk a little bit about and provide resources in the community, kind of as we discussed, make sure that we connect those resources with the community. And we're very grateful and excited for the pool opening, which should occur very soon. But we're just so excited for this opportunity, and of course look towards a brighter future in growing this initiative.
All right, you get a chance to correct me if I'm wrong here, but my effort at internet research here, Swim 1922 is reference to the establishment of the sorority at Butler College in 1922. Is that correct?
Yes, the swim, of course, we know what swim is for.
Right, right.
But 1922 represents the year that we were founded.
Oh, so you have a 100-year anniversary coming up very soon.
Yes, we do. We are so excited as we prepare to march on to our centennial celebration that will take place in Indianapolis in 1922 in July during the summer when we have our large biennial national convention. And then we will be back in November. It's a little cold in Indianapolis, but we will make sure we have our warm coats on and lots of love as we usher in and prepare for the next 100 years.
Any institution that survives 100 years and all the changes and, you know, the discourse that goes on over the course of a century is an amazing organization. You know, congratulations to you guys. That's significant.
Thank you. We're excited too.
All right. Well, you don't come to Sigma Gamma Rho sorority without your own list of accomplishments. You've been working in higher education for quite a while now, correct?
Yes, a number of years.
And you've had the opportunity to work in student life and in curriculum.
Yes, I have been an administrator as well as a professor.
Well, so which one is more important?
You're trying to get me in trouble here on this good morning, but you know what? Actually, I have to say they both are equally as important in the development of students. When you look at the entirety of the student, when you look take a holistic approach, of course they need the academics to support their future goals and aspirations as far as their occupation goals and getting them career ready or job ready. But you know, the student life and the student development component also adds to their goals and aspirations as well. When you focus on their personal goals, what are they passionate about? How do they want to serve society? How do they want to contribute in society? So when you combine the two of them together, not one greater than the other,
right.
The combination really creates an amazing collegiate experience for those who are able to engage actively in both components.
So I'm assuming at some point in time you would like to return to higher education.
I do. It is my passion. I love college students. I love the college community, the environment, and just kind of that sense of preparing young people for the next, whatever the next is going to be.
Anything you would specifically like to do?
I don't know. Maybe in 10 years, you'll see me as a college president at a historically black college or university, or maybe a minority serving institution.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Can we do another podcast then?
Of course we can.
So when we were talking, and I don't want to, you did a very good job of explaining the balance between student life and curriculum. And I'm going to go a little bit more towards student life just because we've had such a conversation in swimming the last, I guess, ever since maybe right around the Rio Games, about mental health of our athletes. Yes. And it's been brought to our attention by our athletes. Allison Schmidt, who's been on the podcast before, Michael Phelps have been very vocal, as have athletes in other sports in the NBA, the NFL, talking about mental health and almost how it's been ignored for years amongst athletes. And I'm interested in your experience with mental health dealing with the students.
Okay. Well, of course, in student life, and initially my career started in student life, I worked in residence life. So I was an RA and I was a hall director, and working in student affairs, oftentimes you're that 24-hour crisis professional. Mm-hmm. So having that experience, I've had the opportunity to engage with students at times when things are challenging for them, especially when it comes down to their mental health and their mental health awareness. The two work hand in hand. While working at South Mountain Community College, we had a partnership with a local outpatient clinic to work with individuals who were in recovery from a mental health breakdown. Often they were dual diagnosed. So in addition to their mental health challenges that they were struggling with and trying to kind of really take control over it, they also may have had substance abuse. So when you couple the two of them together and knowing that oftentimes you will see an emergence of the first onset of a mental health challenge during those late teen or early 20 years. Oftentimes there were different situations that may have happened on campus where I needed to respond as and I'm using air quotes, as a disciplinarian or somebody who's there to support what the college policies are. Once you start talking to the student and you're talking to the young people, you find out that there are so many other things that are going on that they're challenged with, and making sure that you tap into the resources that are available, whether they're on campus or whether they're in the community, for mental health assistance, coping mechanisms, resources, support groups, whatever. It's vital. It's vital to honestly everyone's success. I always say that anyone can be one crisis, one situation, one paycheck from being overwhelmed and having an onset of something that they're unfamiliar with. So having those resources really are important, especially at that pivotal point in their life. And think about athletes. Think about the pressure of our athletes. I mean, they are the world's greatest, period. But there's a lot of pressure that comes along with that. And sometimes we forget to remind them that they're just, they're young people. They're still supposed to have fun and hang out and be able to talk about things. And they have family challenges and academic challenges and things that kind of compound onto the desire for us to want them to be great. And that's a hard balance to make right there.
Yeah. And I think you draw an interesting parallel. Our athletes, especially whenever they have the opportunity to talk about mental health awareness. And the students that you've had the chance to speak with and work with, nobody, comes in and says, my practices are so horrible and so stressful that I'm having mental health issues. Nobody says, my English class is so hard that it's, causing mental health issues. A lot of times it's the surrounding things that are putting pressure. And a lot of times, whether it be the sport or having the opportunity to go to school, is almost like an escape from those. And whenever the pressure builds outside of that environment and seeps in, that's whenever the real problems start. I don't know. I would imagine that somebody's, if swimming itself is the main source of causing somebody stress and miserableness, that they would continue to do it.
Yeah, you know what? I have to agree with you, but sometimes when you look at swimming, at least for me, I'm going to make this very personal. For me, it was in my 30s when I just, was diagnosed with depression and trying to find the balance within myself. I mean, first of all, when I realized what it was and understand my background is counseling, so what a colleague, I was just like, oh, this is what's going on. And they shared it with me. I was able to kind of really have the skies open up. And it was like, oh, because I then understood what was going on. I was able to tap into resources even for myself. But it's hard. It's a challenge. It is something that, individuals struggle with every single day. But for me, swimming is it's my solace. I can get into the water and everything is just kind of zoned out. I don't hear anything. I don't see anything. And for me, it's my place of peace. So if for our athletes, especially those that are swimmers, if that's your place of peace, but you can't go there and even get peace, then where's your outlet? Where is your place for you just to kind of have a safe place for your heart and your mind to rest?
That's a really good story. I like to think about it that way. I would hope for our athletes that it can always be their place that they can go to, that they feel safe and that they, feel empowered and they can relax a little bit. I'm glad it does that for you. Every day, how often do you get to swim?
Oh, see, I'm really busy now, and I have to be honest, since moving here, I've been the executive director at Sigma Gamma Rho since August of 2018. So I've been here in the Cary Raleigh area for about a year and a half, and I have to be honest with you, I have not had the time to be as disciplined as I need to really go and find a facility for me to kind of engage while living in Columbia, South Carolina. I used to go to Drew Wellness Center and swim as often as I could because it is, for me, the most peaceful place on earth. But I said that by the end of the first quarter of this year, which I have to the end of March, is really to find a facility that's close and really put myself back on a schedule to take care of me.
Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody's listening, reach out to Cynthia Eubanks and let her know a good place to swim in that area.
Please.
I want to tie a couple things that we spoke about together. We're talking about, mental health, and I think the last 10 years, as far as mental health awareness has come along, we're discovering that it's a part of everyday life for a lot of Americans. This is not, something exceptional, and the fact that it's becoming more and more widely known and more resources to deal with it, you start looking backwards and you start wondering about issues that were dealt with in a very, very harsh way in the past may have just been mental health issues.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that because just if you don't mind me flipping back as an administrator, one of the things I had an opportunity when working at a HBCU in Columbia, had a really good team of professionals, and we all worked together. So when we saw academics slip, when we saw them not going to their athletic, because we did have scholarship athletes, they didn't show up at games or they weren't going to practice. When we kind of dived into it, underneath it all, there were so many issues that were going on that affected why they were behaving in a certain fashion. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no,
to my mind.
Mm-hmm. No, well, and I guess you and I had opportunity. We have a TV show that was one of our favorites whenever you and I were talking earlier. And I think of, and I'm talking about the TV show, The Wire. And it's actually a pretty sad story whenever you watch all five seasons, because 95% of the people are worse off at the end of the show than at the beginning of the show. However, one character who's probably my favorite other than Omar is Bubbles, who basically starts off as a homeless man, probably or likely with mental health issues, that self-medicates to get through every day. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have you ever thought about Bubbles in that way?
You know, first of all, you know, I'm from New Jersey, so I have to backtrack a little bit and say that, yes, Wire, it was my favorite, but I'm supposed to say The Sopranos is. So I had to throw that out there really quickly, but you're right. But when you think about it, not just in Bubbles' character on The Wire, but across mainstream television and in media and movies, we're starting to see the emergence of mental health awareness, and that what perhaps some people are challenged with, what some people might say is odd behavior or not the norm, may have a issue, or it may have a root in some mental health challenge or issue. And I don't even want to say issue, because that's such a, I don't like that word.
It's a loaded word, yeah.
It is. Let's say mental health awareness that, you know, we may be lacking of, but they may have a better understanding of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of looking earlier, you mentioned the John Jay Criminal Justice, and that was more about a donation to get a pool up and running. But it got me thinking, tying it back in to a character like Bubbles, there's plenty of real life people that are homeless and spending whatever cash they have to self-medicate themselves and then getting thrown in jail. Should Bubbles have ever spent a day in jail?
That's a loaded question. And the reason it's loaded, because at the end of the day, Wire is a fictional show, but it was based on real life experiences, you know, and each experience is different. Oftentimes in our society, we're so quick to punish than we are to help. So I won't say yes or no, should they have gone to jail, because I can't even remember that storyline as specific. But I can say that we as a society have not perhaps provided all the resources, the support, the compassion, and the love that we should provide in helping another person.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I do think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, recently, like the Koch brothers and the ACLU, they joined forces to work on sentencing reform. Mm-hmm. And you have somebody like Robert Kraft working really hard to get Meek Mill out of jail in Philadelphia. And I think the opportunity for social justice reform just seems to be more willing to go down that path than ever before.
Yes. Think of social justice reform. You think of reform, you're trying to make something better and transform it. But you have to really take an honest look at where we're at as far as how do we treat, you know, how are we treating each other? How do we treat the poor in society? How do we treat the sick? How do we treat the homeless? How do we take care of our elderly or our orphans or abandoned or special needs? When you look at all of that, it's separate and in its totality, there is social justice reform that needs to occur across the board. And fortunate enough, we have different individuals that choose to champion a certain cause for a specific reason, based upon a passion or desire in their heart. But again, at the end of the day, you know, when I think about social justice reform, for me, it's how do we right wrongs that have impacted and impaired individuals and their community?
Yes. Yeah. And while it might be very simple and something that somebody doesn't think of every day, but providing the opportunity to learn to swim, where that opportunity didn't exist in a community ever before, can be pretty powerful.
It can be. And when you think about stories such as Maritza McClendon, I love every time she tells, she's often at our swim clinics, and she often tells her story about being diagnosed with scoliosis and for health reasons and recovery. That's why she was, you know, started swimming, and look how far it got her, and look how it changed her life. But what's bigger than that, look how it has changed the lives of those that she's touched.
Yeah. So before we get to the end of our time together today, I did want to give you an opportunity to talk about how you got involved with the USA Swimming Foundation.
Well, that's interesting, and it's personal as well. How I got involved was I actually participated in a swim clinic recently, and it was when we were in Stanford at one of the events. We Sigma Gamma Rho had a swim 1922 clinic, and I actually got in the water this time, and I remember engaging with one of my sorority sisters, and when I tell you, she was terrified. I mean, a terror that I saw and looked in her, and I was like, oh my gosh, it didn't click for me how important, just really how important it was and how personal it was to me. I taught my children how to swim, so they know how to swim. I've, you know, known how to swim my whole life. So for me, I took it for granted. So it wasn't until I had that personal engagement that said, okay, this is bigger than just my involvement through Swim 1922 and the sorority. I need to find a way to fulfill this passion that I have now, because that alarmed me. That shouldn't be. So when the opportunity to become a foundation board member came available, I was so excited, because not only did I see my involvement, of course, through Sigma Gamma Rho sorority, but then how are we engaging the higher educational community? How are we engaging just the communities that we're not able to touch, and really start a movement within a population that really hasn't had that much experience? So when the opportunity came up, I was so excited, and I'm excited now. I'm excited and nervous at the same time, but I truly believe that, you know, in life we all have assignments, and that this is my assignment where I'm at now, and I will set my goals and work with the foundation to support all of their goals and to again further the movement of swimming.
That's wonderful. Are you going to be at any of the upcoming competitions for the remainder of the year?
I am planning to be in Indianapolis. We actually have our national convention this summer in July. So I am actually looking at a couple of things on the schedule in regards to my attendance, participation, and support, and trying to be out there. Haven't identified them specifically, but I will be there.
Okay. I don't know what kind of social media presence you have, if there's anything, Instagram, Twitter, that you share publicly, if people wanted to follow you.
You know what? We're going to laugh for a second, Daniel. I am such a private person that I do have all of that, but not on a public figure type of level. You know, I just try and do it on a grassroots level, just be me, try to do what's right and support causes to move them forward. Okay. So it's best to always follow Sigma Gamma Rho. We are on all the social media platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. and all the other stuff the younger generation talks about that I keep forgetting all the time, but those as well.
Okay. Is there anything I forgot to ask you?
No, you know, I just want to take an opportunity to really thank you for this, for this opportunity to have this discussion with you. We giggled before we started in regards to my experience with a podcast. So this is new to me, but I appreciate the opportunity not only to talk about our Swim 1922 initiative, our initiatives with what the USA Swimming Foundation Board is diving into, and as well as everything else. So thank you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
You have one as well.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us on the Kickset podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit about Cynthia's personal journey and her involvement with swimming, as well as her organization, Sigma Gamma Rho. A few items of housekeeping before we finish up. First of all, the USA Swimming Foundation, which Cynthia Eubanks is a member of the board for, is a really important part of our organization at USA Swimming. The foundation looks to strengthen the sport by saving lives and building champions, has been amazing. It's been wonderful. And it's been a crucial part of our success since the foundation was founded. The last thing, The Wire. Cynthia and I talked about it a little bit. Before there was Game of Thrones, there was The Sopranos and there was The Wire. And I come down on the Wire side of the ledger. It was a really, really important show for me whenever I was back in education years. And they just take a deep dive into the city of Baltimore and the politics and the education and the police and what goes on in the community and journalism, and they tie it all together, and some seasons are better than others. My personal favorite is season 4. Other people love season 3. They finish it up in season 5, probably in not the most rewarding fashion, but nonetheless, it stands the test of time. I think it's around 20 years old now, The Wire, and I've rewatched it many times. If you're looking for something to watch, binge watch, or take on a long trip, or maybe if you're going to the Olympic trials in Omaha, Nebraska this summer. I highly recommend The Wire. And if you've enjoyed where television has gone the last 20 years, then you will enjoy The Wire. Okay. I thank you for your time. If you get a chance, rate and review us on iTunes or SoundCloud or wherever you get the podcast. And I look forward to coming back soon with new guests, and we have some new ideas. I hope you'll really enjoy them. And, thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening to Kick Set with USA Swimming. Check out www.usaswimming.org/kickset for more episodes, and add Kick Set to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes.